Okay, let's close the eyes. Sitting up straight. Let's recite Om three times. Inhale. Open the eyes softly. Now we're going to do this. Is this readable? Everyone can. Mm-hmm. Is the angle okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Screen angle. That's all right. So we'll do this invocation to Sage Patanjali. And you can either read and then sing, kind of chant it along with me, or just read or close the eyes and listen in, whatever works for you.
योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचा मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि.
You want to read the English translation, Prabha? Read it loud.
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the munis, sages, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on Ayurveda, of language through his treatise on grammar, Patanjala Mahabhashya, and the impurities of the chitta, mind field, through his treatise on yoga. Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Very good. So in this, in these sessions what we've been doing, we started almost a year ago now, I don't forget exactly how long. We've been going through the Yoga Sutras in kind of segments, you know. I don't go like chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, etc. That's not the sequence I like. There are sections that I like to do early and then skip some and do some more, etc., etc. That's what we've been doing. Now, are you familiar with the Yoga Sutras at all? None. Not at all.
Zero.
Okay, let's do a very quick introduction. So tell us your first name, last name, where you work, and what brought you to this class today. We'll start with Jessica.
Hello, my name is Jessica Shepherd, and I've been a student of Sabhash's for a long time, and the more I come, the more I want to learn, and so, but I, about myself, I do photography and work at the Film Art Guild, something. I just, I'm here because I just want to continue get some of my journey in yoga.
Very good. Thank you.
My name is Kathy Condis, and I work for Team Health. And I've been with Sabhash for 9 years. Yeah, I just figured that out the other day. Yeah. 9 years. And I just continue to come because I keep learning and loving to spend time with him and learn from him.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen Hawkins, and I have lived in this area just since the late last year and started coming to Sabhash's class in February. I have done teacher training through Yogaville, which is where Sabhash. cost of his training, and started learning about the sutras there and started my studies with that in 2017 I finished. And just keep learning. But, there's more and more and more to learn.
She's halfway through the training.
Yeah, she was telling me. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Prabhupada Ramanujam. I've come to the temple classes, some of them. I really didn't know what this was about, so it's I'm trying to see what this is about and learn.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Curiosity.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I'm Taruna Sharma, and I'm a software engineer by profession. But I've been doing yoga for a while, and I did my teacher training in Rupan Yoga Center. Learned a little bit about yoga sutras there. And I've done a lot of asana practice, and you know, I love to do daredevil work. And
daredevil work.
But wow. I feel that there's a lot of depth that I want to get from sort of, you know, the real place. Like, my grandparents were a big inspiration to me, and they got into meditation and yoga and workshops and stuff. And so when I come to Subhash's class, I get that same vibe.
Welcome everybody. So this is about Prabhupada, this is about yoga philosophy. We study this text called the Yoga Sutras, written by Patanjali many at least 2,500 years ago or so, and we try to understand sutra by sutra. There are 195 sutras in this whole text. And they're very cryptic, very brief sutras. They had to be cryptic in those days because everything was memorized. So you couldn't write very long, you know, and very descriptive sutras. They had to be cryptic. Because of the very nature of them being cryptic, it's very hard to understand them. And therefore you need to understand that, you need some really good commentary by a lot of different people. So that's what you have to use to understand the concepts of these sutras. Okay. And we've been working on the eight limbs of yoga. And these eight limbs of yoga, sign in your name. I already have your email address. You don't need to put your email address. That's signing the name. So, are you familiar with the Yoga Sutras? Not much. Okay. Good.
Actually, I had gone to a medical conference, yoga therapy, in UVA in Charlottesville. And there was somebody from Yogaville and also the UVA, they have a yoga department. So she spoke, and there was an introduction to yoga, and they spoke about all this. I mean, we learned from them, you know, I should be knowing, but you know. Yeah, so they were talking about the Yoga Sutras, but then.
Okay.
From Yogaville?
No, I just happened to go there. It was not in yoga, but it was in university.
Right, they're not that far.
The people came from that,
So the whole philosophy of yoga, I'm just going to summarize. I hope you can bear with me. very briefly, you know, the very concept of yoga is to calm the mind. That I always like to emphasize that yoga is about the mind. Okay? Even when you here, remember what it says is that Patanjali is credited with three things. And remedies are removed, impurities of the body through treatise on Ayurveda, and then grammar through Mahabhashya, and the impurities of the mind through the treatise on yoga. So yoga is about the mind. That's what you have to remember. Okay? So yoga is about the mind, and you have to cleanse the mind, purify the mind of all the impurities, and then get into a state which we call self-realization, which is to understand who we truly are, our true nature. And to do that, he has prescribed these eight sets of practices called the eight limbs of yoga. They are called Ashtanga Yoga in Sanskrit. Okay? Ashtanga means the eight limbs of yoga. And we've been going through these eight limbs one at a time. And right now we are in the last three limbs of yoga, which are the three limbs being the meditation. Okay? The first five are yamas, niyamas, which are the social, ethical, and moral guidelines. Things like never telling a lie, not hurting anybody, not stealing from anybody, being very pure and clean, etc., etc. There are 10 of those, five each, five yamas and five niyamas. We did those with some depth. And then the third limb is asana, which is the physical stretching part, physical posture part. Then pranayama is all the practices that relate to breathing practices, pranayama. And the number five limb is, and do you remember the number fifth limb?
Dharana.
Number five.
Pratyahara.
Sense withdrawal. Sense withdrawal. So you turn the senses inward and then try not to get bothered by the five senses. That's called the limb of Pratyahara. And the last three limbs are related to the concept of meditation. And these three limbs are called dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Dharana is the ability to focus initially on a single point of focus for some length of time. And then when the mind is a little bit stabilized, then you transition to your meditation, which could be a mantra meditation. Mantra meditation means you chant a mantra continuously and then stay chanting on that mantra. That becomes the dhyana part or the meditation part. And when that deepens, and then you are able to stay focused on that mantra for a long period of time without the interruption through other thoughts, that's called samadhi. So now we started discussing the concept of meditation in the last session, and we went up to the understanding of sampragnyata and asampragnyata samadhi. Anybody remember those terms? No.
Did we discuss that last
Yes.
time? I thought that's what was coming up. But okay.
No, that's the one we discussed last time.
Okay.
So,
that's
this
right.
is...
Yeah.
So we went through these things.
So that's 170.
That is 3.1 dharana. Understanding what dharana is. Then we understood what dhyana is, then samadhi, and then those three together, they are called sanyama. And then we went to sampragnyata, which is 117.
Yes, that's what we are.
And then we also did 118, which is the asampragnyata samadhi. Okay. The distinction between sampragnyata and asampragnyata is sampragnyata means it is with the knowledge of a seed or a mantra, basically. Or some object of meditation which is in your mind, and you stay with that mantra or that meditation object. That means it is with an element in your mind, some kind of a seed. Asampragnyata means it is without that seed. You go beyond that whole thing, okay, and then that becomes the asampragnyata. There is no seed at that point. Okay, so this is where we were last time. And we wanted to continue from that point on. Now, one thing I must mention is that these concepts are very deep. Okay, they are very deep concepts. They relate to states of the mind which are beyond normal levels of consciousness. They talk about very deep, elevated states of consciousness. Okay. The intellect is incapable of understanding these states. Okay. And that's the only medium that I have to try and understand these statements. But then these yogis tell us that they go beyond the intellect. So what I'm trying to tell you is that I am doing this with a very obvious set of limitations. Okay, my intellect is limited, and I can only use my intellect to do the best that I can understand, but they go beyond that, therefore I may not be able to convey the full essence of these sutras and their full significance. That's all I'm saying. So share, bear with me.
But even we can only understand using our intellect.
I know, but you know, if there was somebody who has realized all these things, they can explain it better. That's all I'm saying. Person who has self, who has attained self-realization, they can probably do better. Get the point, right? Some of the swamis, like, you know, people who have higher states of consciousness, I'm assuming they can do a better job. So we'll do our best. Okay. All right. So I'm going to break individual words, all right, as we always do. Kshina vrittehe. Everyone try to repeat. You do your best. Kshina vrittehe. Abhijatasya.
Abhijatasya.
Eva.
Eva.
Manehe.
Manehe.
Grahitra.
Grahitra.
Grahana.
Grahana.
Grahyeshu,
Grahyeshu,
Tatstha,
Tatstha,
Tadanjanata,
Tadanjanata,
Samapatti,
Samapatti.
It's a mouthful of Sanskrit words. But I, that part I can do a little bit easier than the philosophical part. Hopefully this will give us some understanding. Okay. All right, let me keep that. Vritti, remember the word vritti? Everyone remembers vritti? What's vritti?
Fluctuations.
Fluctuation of the mind. Now, kshina vrittehe, that means, kshina means diminished. When the fluctuations of the mind have been diminished, kshina vrittehe. Abhijatasya, manehe. Mani, what's mani? Anybody know what the word mani means?
Gem.
Gem, crystal.
Gem, crystal.
Very pure, clear, clean crystal. That's money. Mm. Now, abhijatasya means a crystal which has become extremely pure, very, very super pure, shining, polished, you know, all that stuff. That's the abhijatasya. Now, what happens is, if you have a crystal or a gem or something which is sitting on a table, and you put something colored next to it, it's going to reflect that same color exactly. If you put a red flower next to it, what you see through the crystal is going to be just that red color. And it's going to exactly kind of reflect that. All right. I think what they try to tell you is that when the mind has been purified, cleansed, it has now become as clear and as pure as a money, or as pure and as clear as a crystal, it's going to reflect exactly, show the true exact nature of whatever is presented to it. So far so good. Now what is being presented to it? It could be the So there are three terms here. Grahitra, Grahana, Grahya. Okay? Now what do these terms mean? What is being done by the mind? Basically, it is getting input from the five senses.
Grahana means assimilation.
is...
What means knowledge?
Rahane?
Grahana.
Rahana.
Well, it's a little stretch. It's a sketch. But let me explain what's happening here. The five senses are the instruments through which we get information about the objects that are lying outside the five senses, right? So who is being the observer? It's the mind or the intellect, basically. The intellect is finally getting all the information about what's being observed through the five senses. And the instruments are these eyes, ears, skin, etc. Those are the instruments of receiving information. Okay. So the word grahitra means one who is doing the receiving. One who is doing the receiving. And who's that in our case? It's the intellect eventually. The intellect is doing the reception of the information from the five senses. And grahya means what is being received from outside. Grahya. Something that's being received from outside. And grahana is the whole process of attaining that information, of receiving that information. Grahana. Through these instruments of knowledge. Instruments being the eyes, ears, etc. The five senses, sense instruments, you can call them. Right? So what is being said here? This is a very, very detailed kind of a sutra, and it took me a long time to even get a grasp of what it's saying. I'm not saying that I understand it fully yet, as I said. Okay. So there are three things involved. The perceiver, the element of perception, and what is being perceived. Those are the three things: grahana, grahya, and grahitra. Now, when any one of these is presented to this very beautiful clear crystal, that stuff is going to be shown very clearly into the pure intellect, eventually it's going to be presented to the soul, the Atma, or the pure intuitive wisdom. So, and what happens after that? When it is in that position, tatstha means being in that position, tad anjanata. Anjanata is the coloring. Okay? And that coloring of the mind, which kind of mind? Kshira vritti. That means the mind which has been purified and its vrittis have become very, very diminished, kshina. The coloring of that mind, either by the perceiver or the perception or the perceived, it's going to have exactly the same color, or it's going to be perceived absolutely 100% true to the object that's being perceived. Am I making sense at all? It's hard. I'm not saying that I am, like I said, it's a hard concept to understand and to present for me.
So, can I
go ahead? Yes.
So, what they're trying to say is that when we reach a point where what is happening is perceived by us exactly the way it's happening, and not based on our prior knowledge. And
that's exactly the point. You've got it right. It's not based on our samskaras. The whole purpose of kshina vritti, cleansing the mind, cleansing the vritti, is to remove any influence from the past samskara. That's the whole purpose of cleaning. Okay, that's what it means. When that part has been done, then whatever is presented to the mind, it's going to be presented in its pure clarity.
It's a true representation.
True representation of whatever it is. Whether we're looking at an outside world, outside object, inside object, it could be anything. It could be one of the objects in our mind. It could be our ego. It could be our tanmatras, or the five sense perceptions. Okay, whatever is being presented to the mind, it's going to be presented in its full clarity. 100%. That's the only way you can get a true understanding of what we are looking at. And that state of the mind is called samapatti. That's the definition of the word samapatti. That's the final word here, samapatti. Samapatti is total absorption in the object that's being perceived. It's very similar to samadhi. There are some commentators who seem to distinguish between samadhi and samapatti. I don't understand that distinction, but many others, many of the prominent commentators say they are the same terms. And Patanjali just decided to use a slightly different term for this samapatti.
Is this similar to samyama?
Samyama is the technique of getting there. Samyama is the combination of dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. When you practice that, then you get to this state where the mind has become very clear and you are able to perceive everything in its true color. So samyama is the technique, and you get there eventually. The purpose of samyama is to get into the state of samapatti. You got it? Right. Okay.
So one question. What is the aim of life now? We are trying to get to samadhi or samapatti. Oh, you said it's the same thing.
Same thing. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you recall, if you go back to 117, does anybody remember what 117 was? There were four types of samadhi defined. Does anybody remember the four types of the samadhi? Go back and look at the 17. Yeah. There are four types of samadhi defined. Vitarka, Vichara, Ananda, Asmita. Those are the four stages of samadhi. What do they mean? So let me go back to that 170 because you need to understand that. Vitarka means when the object of meditation is a gross object. The properties being imagined, the properties being meditated upon are the gross properties of any object. You know, Vyasa in his commentary has given the example of a cow. Okay, so if you come and meditating on a cow, then the gross element will be the physical appearance of the cow, texture, color, shape, size, etc., etc. That's the gross part. I like to take an example of a fruit, for example. I like mangoes, so I always I like to take the example of a mango. So the gross part, the vitarka part, would be the actual physical texture of the physical shape, size, texture, color, all that part of the mango would be the gross object. Gross object. That's the vitarka part. Okay? And then vichara is the subtler element or the subtle components of that object. What is subtler than the touch, feel, etc.? The taste. Smell, that's subtle, right? You cut the mango and it smells something, or the color of it, that's the subtle part.
Something that you can't touch.
You can't touch, you can't feel it.
Something that you can't touch or measure.
Touch, yes. So that's the subtler part, which is the vichara part. Okay, so vitarka vichara. And then once you go past vichara, then you get into those two states called ananda and asmita. What's ananda?
Happiness. Bliss.
Bliss. Bliss. Now, what that means is that, for example, a mango, right? My understanding is that if you go beyond just the physical or the subtle aspects, like the color, taste, smell, etc. Okay, let's take the taste part. Because that's probably the most important for most people. You put that mango in your mouth and you start enjoying that every single bite. Okay? And eventually, when you get past that experience of that taste, all that is left is the pure state of ananda. It's a blissful state. Okay? Then you forget about the taste, then you forget about the mango, There's no member in your mind. There's no taste or smell in your mind.
It's as if it's taken
it's
you to a place.
It has taken you to a higher
beyond
place.
Beyond its characteristics or whatever.
Hmm?
Beyond its pleasures that it's given you.
Yes.
Beyond that.
It has changed your state.
It's changed
your
state.
Yeah.
Okay, to a state of ananda. Or where you are now kind of in a state of bliss and you really were, you know, you're enjoying that whole thing. Okay? But then you can go beyond that state into the state of asmita. That's the final state. Asmita means just the state of being. Just being, asmita. Asmi means I am. Asmita means the state of I am-ness. Right? Asmita. And where's that state coming from? It's beyond ananda. Once you have lived in the ananda state, in the blissful state, then all you know is that I exist. I am. There's nothing beyond that, nothing more than that. Absolutely, no. Is that easy to understand? No, because I haven't been there, so I don't know how to explain that state. But that's the state of asmita. Asmita means I exist. It's a pure essence of being, as they call it. Pure essence of being. That's the state of asmita. And that's the final state of meditation that you can get into. Right? So those are the four stages of samadhi which were defined in Sutra 17 in chapter 1. Called the Sampragnyata Samadhi. The distinction between Sampragnyata and Asampragnyata was, what's the difference?
With
an object of meditation is Sampragnyata. And when the object dissolves completely, disappears, and only thing that remains is the samskara, which are ineffective. Samskaras can go nowhere. They're always going to be there in your chitta, in your mind field, memory field. Then, when there is no vritti in the mind, there's no seed in the mind, and only thing that's left is the samskaras, which have become ineffective because there's nothing to prod them up, bring them up. That's called the Asampragnyata, or he also uses the term later on, Nirbija Samadhi. Nirbija means seedless, no seed.
So, what is the difference between seed and the samskaras? I'm not sure I understand what the seed is.
Seed is, samskara is basically a seed in
okay.
some sense. Okay. Anything that you have used in the past, for example, your mantra, that's mm-hmm. a seed. Okay, now what happens is everything is going to create, and we are coming to those concepts as to how the samskaras can be diminished in their influence. When the last samskara has become completely ineffective, then there is no seed left.
Okay.
Samskaras are the seeds.
Okay, well that was what I thought, and it sounded like you were making a difference. So
no, samskaras are the seeds. But they have become ineffective.
Ineffective. They are not impacting you at
yes.
all in any
yes.
anything.
They're still there, but
they're not.
The term that Vyasa uses in his commentary
uh-huh.
is called dagdha bija. Dagdha means burnt seed.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the
mm-hmm.
seed is there, it has been
burnt.
That means if you put it in the ground, it's not going to bring any fruit. It's been completely made devoid of its effectiveness.
Is it gone out of the memory? Like, what does it mean? Gone? I mean, is it gone out of the memory? No, it's not gone out of the memory. But it doesn't arouse a vritti. It does not create a vritti in the mind.
It's incapable of being a vritti.
And does vritti also have any emotional thing? Like, okay,
absolutely.
That's a memory is there, but I don't feel anything thinking about it.
Everything is a part of the samskara, the emotions, feelings, everything, you know, all these are part of samskara. And whenever they come up, they create a vritti in the mind, fluctuation in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else also gets affected.
So if a person's state is not altered by the memory, by the invocation of a memory, then that is a burnt seed.
That's a burnt seed. That's the dandha bija. That's the name given by Vyasa. Everyone knows what I'm talking about, Vyasa. Vyasa is the most original commentator of the Yoga Sutras. And many people claim or believe that Vyasa and Patanjali were around the same time.
Contemporaries.
Contemporaries. And then they knew each other. So Vyasa most likely knew the Patanjali's mind, so he was able to give a commentary which is very genuine and authentic. And most subsequent commentators, not modern, even the ancient commentators, they all used Vyasa's commentary as their basis for the commentaries. So that's the sutra number 41. Now, what Patanjali has done, he has, in these sutras now that they are coming up, he has subdivided the first two, the Vitarka and Vichara, into two more subdivisions. Okay? So one he calls Savitarka, the second he calls Nirvitarka. And then the third one he calls Savichara, and fourth one he calls Nirvichara. So this Vitarka and Vichara he has divided into two sub-segments, two subdivisions. Ananda and Asmita he has left alone. They are just there. Okay. Ananda Samadhi and Asmita Samadhi, they don't change. The only thing he has done is to give a division of Vitarka and Vichara. Okay, so now we come into this Savitarka Samapatti. Savitarka means with Vitarka, with the gross identification, gross element identification. So you want to know the Sanskrit? Tatra,
Tatra,
Shabda,
Shabda,
Artha,
Artha,
Jnana,
Jnana,
Vikalpaihi,
Vikalpaihi,
Sankirna,
Sankhya,
Savitarka,
Savitarka,
Samapattihi,
Samapattihi.
So when the tatra means there or in that state where the mind has been cleansed, okay. Now, then there is trying to now define what is Savitarka with Vitarka. So what it's saying is, in the Savitarka Samadhi, the Shabda, Artha and Jnana, they are intermixed. Okay, Sankirna means intermixed. Alright. Has anybody heard these terms before from me? Shabda, Artha and Jnana?
Artha, Jnana. Okay.
What is Shabda? Shabda is the word or the phrase or the sound of that word or a phrase that we use for meditation. Shabda, right? Word or a phrase. So, when we meditate, remember we usually have a mantra for meditation, right? Any of you meditate on a regular basis?
No.
Do you use a mantra or is some different style of meditation?
Fight.
I meditate. You do.
You don't use a mantra?
What is mantra?
Okay, then you don't use it. That's fine. There are many styles of meditation which are practiced without the use of the mantra. Especially if you follow some of the Buddhist traditions, they don't use a mantra. There is one very popular style of meditation. It's called
Vipassana.
I
don't know what it
is. Yeah, Vipassana is a very commonly practiced style of meditation by the followers of Buddhist traditions. And in that one, you don't use a mantra. You just use your breath or your awareness of your body, etc. I have never attended their program, but that's what people come back and tell me. I've I've always intended to go to one of these classes, but I've never found the time. It requires 10 days of dedication. So, in the Patanjali system, there is usually what he calls an object of meditation, and which most places is a mantra. Mantra is the sound, or the word itself, or a short phrase that you chant in your mind. Okay? You practice meditation?
In schools, they used to teach us transcendental meditations, okay.
But
not regularly.
So that's transcendental meditation is mantra meditation. So all based on a mantra. So a mantra will have it's a shabda. Shabda means it has a word or a phrase as its basis, and it has a sound when you chant the mantra. So it has a sound, right? So if you pick a word, give me any word that you want to use as a mantra.
Shanti.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Shanti. Shanti is peace, for example, right? So you chant the word Shanti, 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 and that becomes your mantra. And you do that mentally, you don't loudly do it in general. There are certain types of meditation where you actually have to start out loud chanting, but very few. The normal recommendation is that you chant your mantra silently. So you will do peace, peace, peace. Now, peace has two components. One is the sound that it makes when you chant the mantra. You will vibrate your whole mind with that sound. Peace, peace, peace. It will fill your mind. That sound will fill your mind. The second is the visual image of the word peace itself. So you may write it in English and keep a visual image of that, mental image of that word as it is written. That also becomes your shabda part. Now, what is artha?
So would that be like vitarka? Sorry, savitarka?
You're coming to that.
You're looking at the gross.
I'm coming to that. Hold on.
So artha means the meaning. Meaning.
Artha means the meaning. Artha means the essential meaning of that. Of that word or a phrase. What
does
the
meaning of peace, if you're chanting.
What's the meaning of peace to you? What are you looking for when you said, my mantra is peace? Why did you pick that? You could have picked it because you want peace in your family, peace at your workplace, peace in the country, peace in the Middle East, whatever. Okay? That becomes your meaning. That becomes your artha. Now, jnana is
knowledge.
Knowledge means it's the complete set of knowledge or information that resides in your mind, in your mental memory bank, which relates to that word. Again, it could be all of those things now. It could be peace in the Middle East, peace at your home, whatever, you know, and it could kind of encompass a lot of other things which relate to peace. Okay? That's the jnana part. So, shabda, artha, jnana, vikalpaihi. Vikalpaihi is simply means by imagination, by the thoughts of all these vikalpas. Sankirna, it's all intermixed. Sometimes you'll get the shabda part in your mind, sometimes you'll get the artha part, sometimes the jnana part. They're going to get intermingled in your mind from time to time. From every moment to moment, you might get something, one or the other. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So even as you're using the mantra, you can just it just kind of goes. Your mind may go back and forth between
these
what
three.
It is between the three.
Okay. Well, okay. The point is what he's saying is when it reaches that stage, when your mind is able to stay within the framework of these three attributes, okay. You have attained the state of savitarka samadhi. Mm-hmm. That means that's the state of. Deep state of meditation, which is called savitarka samadhi.
So you only are focused on the mantra. And so nothing is coming in, nothing is distracting, there are no other thoughts that are coming across your mind.
You're within the framework of these three.
Only these three, okay.
Then you are in a state of savitarka samadhi. Mm-hmm. And you're only looking at some gross aspect of your mantra. You know, Vyasa gives the example of a cow all the time. In most of his examples, it says. So if you're looking at the physical object cow, then that's the vitarka part. In our case, if it's a mantra, vitarka would be just the sound or vibration of that, or whatever that. The physical object, if you're looking at the physical image of the written object, or the meaning of that, you know, it's again a very gross kind of a thing. Okay, this is where my understanding kind of is a bit hazy. You know, how to distinguish between the gross and the subtle. I'm not able to get very good examples to explain that concept. Okay, if you take the example of a cow, it's much easier to explain, but that's not what I want to meditate on. Right? That's the problem. I want to meditate on mantra, and then none of these.
What is beyond these three things with a mantra?
Right. The very essence of the mantra, basically. Yeah. You know, the very essence of the mantra. See, if you say peace or any other word, the essence of peace is what? It's total harmony, total, you know, complete lack of disruption of anything. That's peace. Now, gross level, you're looking at peace in your family. Subtle level, you're just looking for peace eventually.
Just the feeling of being
extremely peaceful, calm, quiet, irrespective of where that peace is happening. Okay? And then you go to the Ananda and Asmita part eventually. But what he's saying is that as long as you are able to come to a stage where you are within the framework of these three attributes of Shabda, Artha, and Jnana, that is your first stage of meditation called Savitarka Samadhi. This is where, you know, I keep telling myself, I need a guru. At this point, when I was reading this, I didn't get time to read this thoroughly at all. But when I was reading this earlier, that's the thought that crosses my mind. I need a guru now, who I can sit down with and get a deeper understanding. Because these are concepts which are not very easy to grasp for me. Savitarka. All right. What is nirvitarka? Nir means without. Sa means with. So when you add the prefix sa, it means with. Savitarka means with vitarka. And nirvitarka means nir means without. Without vitarka. That means there is no vitarka going on there. Now, let's read the Sanskrit first. All right. Smriti.
Smriti.
Parishuddhau.
Parishuddhau.
Swarup.
Sarupa.
Shunyeva.
Shunyeva.
Artha matra.
Artha matra.
Nirbhasa.
Nirbhasa.
Nirvitarka.
Nirvitarka.
Smriti Parishuddhau. Smriti means the memory. Memory. Parishuddhau means?
Shuddha means
purification. So on the purification of the memory, that's what happens. When the memory is purified, actually, you know, one of you should read the translation in English. That way, at least we have a good start.
Okay. When the memory is well purified, the knowledge of the object of concentration shines alone, devoid of the distinction of name and quality. This is Nirvarta Samadhi.
Nirvitarka.
Nirvitarka.
Yes.
Samadhi, or Samadhi without deliberation.
Okay, so, again, you know,
What is the liberation?
What I'm saying is, I don't entirely agree with this translation.
Okay.
This is not good word-by-word translation. It's a little stretch. What it means is, I'm going by the Sanskrit phrase itself, okay? So on the purification of the memory, what does it mean, purification of memory? Again, what Taruna was saying, it's cleansing of all the influence of the samskaras. Because that's all there is in the memory. So when the samskaras have become ineffective, that's pretty parishuddha. Svarupa shunya eva. Right? Svarupa means its own self, svarupa, okay, your own nature. Let me try to paraphrase it, see if I can phrase it nicely, all right? When the mind is purified and it is not even aware that it is the meditator, it becomes devoid of its own entity as the meditator. And the only thing that is occupying the mind at that point is the artha, or the pure essential meaning of the object that you're meditating upon. Your mind is completely occupied and filled with the essential meaning of that object. Not its jnana part, not the peripheral information part, not the sound part, not the physical image part, but what is the essence of the meaning? Why did you pick that mantra as your object of meditation? And your mind is completely filled with that essential meaning. That's the nirvichara samadhi. Yeah, nirvitarka samadhi. Does that make sense now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to read.
Yeah.
Swami Satchidananda's translation, that doesn't make sense to me.
Says that
Svarupa Shunyeva. So that means the mind is not even aware of its own form. Svarupa is its own form.
Okay, the Svarupa refers to the form, or when the memory is purified, so whatever was there, the different forms that existed in the memory, those are gone.
No. Svarupa.
Okay.
It's the Svarupa of the meditator.
Okay. Meditator.
Svarupa. Svarupa shunyeva arthamatra nirbhasa. Svarupa means the meditator's own form.
Okay.
That means the mind is not aware of its own entity or existence.
Mm-hmm. The mind doesn't know
it's
a mind.
The mind doesn't know it's the mind, because
yeah.
Now
it's gone beyond.
It's gone beyond, and its whole space has been taken over by the artha part.
Mm-hmm.
You have become, the whole mind intellect complex has become one with the object of meditation and its essence.
In short, it's absorbed in that, it never comes back to, on the computer. Like sometimes the computer does multitasking, it switches from one task to another. But right now that my computer is just completely engrossed in one task.
That's right.
It cannot come back to think, it has to switch its context.
Right.
Something.
No context. Okay. But the key condition here is that smriti parishuddha, that's the key condition. That the mind has to be completely purified of all the influence, negative influence that samskaras have on us. And that's a very tall order. That's not something that's going to happen anytime soon. Okay. So this thing happens only when the smriti or the memory bank has been completely purified of all the negative influences that samskaras have on us all the time. That's why it is a very, very important precondition to get into the state of nirvitarka samadhi, samapatti.
I have a question. So they say when you are in this state, this will happen, and then that will happen. What about getting to the process of removing that negative influence?
That's meditation.
Right. So then, like steps. So do you just take maybe you have to be aware of what things have the most negative influence on you and meditate on that one after another, reduce.
Meditation. You know, basically, you are only meditating on the mantra.
I like her question though. Like, if we could select what memories we could get rid of, that would be awesome.
But
isn't the idea to get rid of all of them? I don't think it matters whether you think they're positive or negative memories.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't matter. Positive, negative memories. It's just memories.
Yeah. But what you guys say is also mentioned in chapter 3.
Yeah.
Because in chapter 3, it tells you sanyama on what. And one of the objects of sanyama, he says, is your samskaras. So you can actually meditate on your samskaras.
There's a movie about this. I just want to mention this called Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet. It's a great movie, but it's really kind of crazy. Because they people have these memories in this event. Maybe they had a relationship or something happened to them at work or something like that, and they can't move forward. And it's so bad that this doctor has this procedure where he erases their memories, and they can move on.
It's
a really poignant
movie. I'm betting it's not meditation.
Because they come to the point where they don't want to erase their memories. They want them back, and they.
Interesting.
That's a good point to understand. Because we don't want to erase our memory. If we erase our memory, we cannot function in life. What we want to erase are these samskaras.
Let me explain
the three components of the memory, three parts of the memory.
Okay.
The one is called pure memory, which the word for that is still smriti. Just the memory, pure memory. The second is called samskara, and I'll explain what the distinction between these three is. So one is pure memory called smriti, the second is the impressions called samskara, third is called vasana. Vasana is the hidden kind of a desire that you might have in your mind. Those are the three components of the memory, you can call them. Smriti is the pure memory, all right? So we're having this meeting, and it's a Saturday, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have 7 people in the class. This is all part of the pure memory. You get absorbed, it get etched in your mind as a memory.
Okay.
As a realistic assessment of what we have. Okay. Now, samskara is whether you like this meeting or you didn't like it. Okay, that's the part where we put a label. Ego puts a label on it.
Okay.
Oh, that was a great meeting. It was such a stupid meeting. It was a waste of time. You know, all that. That becomes the samskara part, where you like it or dislike it, whether it was painful or whether it was pleasurable, whether you liked it or disliked it, whether you hated it or loved it. Those kind of labels are put by the ego, and they are called samskara. Klishta, aklishta, vritti, there is a sutra in the first chapter itself. Every vritti can be labeled as either pleasant or unpleasant. Klishta, aklishta. So that's the label that is put by the ego, and that's called a samskara. The ego also adds another label to it, which is called vasana, which is, do I want to have a repeat of a similar experience in the future, or I would never want to have this again. Do I want to come back for this meeting, or I've had enough of this meeting, I'm not going to come back. Okay? That's called vasana. Alright? What I'm suggesting is, don't wipe out the memory part. You want to function in this world. You need the memory, because that's the only way you will know that it was on a Saturday or on such and such date that you went to this meeting. Okay? And then you want to decide whether you want to come back or not.
Is this related to non-attachment and not being judgmental.
Non-attachment and non-judgmental parts, they're all interlinked. They're absolutely attached to all this. Okay, if you attached, if you were very attached to this meeting, then what happens? You're getting ready to come to this meeting, and you have a flat tire. You cannot come. You're miserable because you're so attached to this meeting. That's where the attachment part comes. If you are not attached, then you take it in a stride. It's okay. Hopefully, Jessica's recorder will work, and I will be able to listen to so, you know, all that will happen then. That's where the attachment comes in. Attachment is a part of every aspect of our life.
Maybe not. So, labeling, the samskara comes from judgment.
Judging, yes. Samskara comes from judgment. Very true. All right. So but Patanjali has used the term smriti to include everything. Smriti parishuddho means he is cleansing everything of the samskaras and vasanas, everything.
So you retain the original pure memory.
Yes. Yeah. And erase everything. And make, and you cannot erase anything, like I said. It can only be made ineffective.
Essentially no labeling. No labeling.
No labeling, exactly.
That is the pure memory.
No, labeling is also okay. You may need the labeling also, but it's the interpretation of the labels.
So, to be in the present moment, in the now, as opposed to
being
relying on being in the past or in the future.
Yes. So, let me add one more sentence to that part.
Yeah, I didn't understand.
Interpretation of the labels, okay? The labels can be interpreted by either the ego or the intellect. Okay? If the ego is allowed to interpret the labels, it's going to say, aha, I like that cake. I have to have it again. Okay? The intellect can also interpret the label. He says, oh yes, I like the cake. I may want to try it again. But it has to decide whether it's a good cake, bad cake, it is good for me or not. Things might have changed over the, you know, in my standard example, from the past experience of that cake to the current experience, my cholesterol levels have gone up. Now, even though 2 weeks ago I was able to eat that cake nicely, no problem, now I cannot. If it was left to the ego to interpret the label, ego will say, go ahead and eat it, because the label says it was very good. Doesn't care about the cholesterol. The intellect, on the other hand, is able to understand the distinction. And even though the label says it was very good cake, it's going to desist from eating it because now cholesterol levels are very high.
So then where is the purification of the memory happening?
That's purification. When the intellect has taken over, that's purification.
Okay.
So that's okay.
Okay. So the memory exists, but it exists at a higher plane rather than being.
Yeah, it's the higher mind which has taken over, which is called the intellect, or pure intellect, or the intellect which is driven by the intuition, not by the ego. That's called purification of the mind. And it all depends on what kind of samskaras are there in the mind. And those things are explained much better when we come to chapter 3, how that purification happens.
It's sort of the difference from seeing the cake and reacting to putting a pause and responding.
Yes.
Right?
Giving your buddhi a chance to
respond, not to react blindly based on the ego. That's very true.
So when does that happen?
just keep meditating
until it happens. Many lifetimes.
It does say
many lifetimes.
It takes many lifetimes. That's what Patanjali says. It doesn't happen in one lifetime. It's not going to happen. It's a multi-lifetime effort.
But isn't it also like through the asana practice and trying to apply, like being meditative on, okay, I am now here, like, you know, being in touch with the current moment.
Absolutely.
And then taking a pause. Like, I mean, sometimes you might take a pause, sometimes you might not. But it's like a habit, new habit, maybe you're trying to develop of not being the ash vidal.
Yes. It applies to everything. Asana practice, pranayama practice, it's a habit. That's why we always say, give a pause after inhalation and exhalation. Pause. Feel what's going on.
Yeah.
Get into the moment, basically. Okay, don't allow yourself to be carried away. I always add that level of pause at the end of each breath. At the end of each movement, pause. Assess.
Assess, yeah.
Okay, still where you are.
Because that's so absent in so many other forms of exercise, where you put on the music and make it like, you know, like
right.
Party and and then you're not thinking, just swayed by the music.
That's right, yes. Okay. Comment got turned off. I never did that.
Must be smart TV.
All right.
One more question, last one. Sorry. If we try to develop and if we are sort of successful in doing the pause thing, will we eventually not create these samskaras as much?
It's possible, yeah.
So our old ones are there, but then every time we say that,
well, samskara is going to be created every time we have an experience.
Like a judgment.
Not necessarily a judgment. The judgment will be put by the ego. Yeah. And we'll put that label anyway. But the question is, as we go through our meditation cycle in life, what happens as a result of that? Right? And that's what is mentioned and described in chapter 3. When you get to chapter 3 and understand the concept of meditation, then what transformation is happening in the mind, that's what is explained there, and that will answer your questions. How that transformation happens when you meditate. Okay.
Smriti Parishuddhau Swarupa Shunyeva Artha Matra Nirbhasa Nirvitarka. Alright, let's move on.
This is the savichara and nirvichara. Let me get some water while you try to read the translation and see if it makes sense. All right, let's read the Sanskrit first. Etayaiva
Etayaiva
Savichara
Savichara
Nirvichara cha
Nirvichara cha
Sukshma Vishaya
Sukshma Vishaya
Vyakhyata
Vyakhyata.
Okay. So, having described how to understand the Savitarka and Nirvitarka, Patanjali says that go ahead and apply the same logic to Vichara and Savichara and Nirvichara, and you will understand that concept. That's all it says. Say that in the same manner, Etaya means in the same manner, you can explain the savichara and nirvichara, which are more subtler. Sukshma means subtle. Okay?
So sukshma vishaya means these are more subtler than what we discussed earlier. So vitarka and savitarka and nirvitarka were more grosser. And therefore, if we apply the same logic, same understanding to savichara and nirvichara, which are more subtle, okay, then that will be explained. Then that will explain savichara and nirvichara. That's what it means. Now, what's the distinction again? Like I said, it is subtler qualities that you are meditating on, not just the gross qualities. So if it's shanti, now you are getting into the peace aspect of it, not necessarily peace in the family, peace in your world, or peace in your neighborhood, peace with your spouse. That part you've already gone past that. That's the gross part. And now it's just the very essence of peace. Now you're not thinking of the surroundings. Now you're not thinking.
You're feeling it. Is it? You're not thinking it.
You're being it, basically. You're being that feeling of peace. You're becoming that feeling of peace. What it means is the surrounding. You know what they say is, in the nirvichara part, you have lost the concept of space and time, essentially. Space means, if it was peace, it would be peace in my house, household, or peace in my neighborhood, peace in my city, that's space. Time, you know, again, I wanted peace yesterday, but now it's not peaceful, and you know, there's a concept of time in general, in most cases. When you get to the state of nirvichara, the subtlest aspect of vichara, there is no concept of space and time. It is just that peace, that shanti, pure essence of being peaceful. That's it. So it's beyond space and time, in my understanding. Savichara and nirvichara, samadhi, which are practiced upon subtle objects, are explained same manner. Now Patanjali, you know, in this segment of the explanation, he does not even talk about ananda and asmita. He talked about that in Sutra 117, but then it is assumed that they remain there. You know, you eventually have to, once you transcend your level of meditation beyond vichara and vitarka, then ananda and asmita will follow automatically. Okay? No, what's the meaning of subtleness of the objects? The subtlety of the possible objects of concentration ends only in the unmanifest. Now let me read the Sanskrit first. Sukshma vishayatvam cha alinga paryavasanam. Right. So again, sukshma vishayatvam cha alinga paryavasanam. Right. Now, this is a very loaded sutra. Okay, it goes back to understanding the whole concept of Sankhya philosophy that I have mentioned from time to time.
What philosophy?
Sankhya.
Sankhya.
Okay. And the question is, do we want to do it now? Or do you want to wait for the next session? I can go through it briefly now.
Briefly, give us a little taste.
Okay, so what this sutra is saying, you know, in the previous sutra it says that when you apply those same concepts that were explained for the vitarka, and you apply them to the to the subtle aspects of an element, that of your object of meditation, subtle aspects, then you get into savichara and nirvichara samapatti. That's the last sutra we just talked about. What he's saying is, what is the subtlest level that you can get to? What are subtle levels, and what is the subtlest level that you can get to, that you can meditate on? You know, there are these elements that constitute the prakriti. Does everyone remember the words purusha and prakriti?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's purusha? The
soul.
The soul, the atman, the self. That's the purusha. And what's prakriti?
Everything else.
Everything else. That's
the three gunas. The three gunas.
Everything that is controlled by the three gunas.
Okay.
Everything that is controlled by the three gunas. Excellent. And what are there? What is that everything? That's where the
The manifest.
Hmm?
The manifest.
The manifest, I know,
okay.
But what does it constitute? What is the constituent elements of the manifest? It comprises of these 23 elements.
Okay.
You don't recall that?
I don't know the 20. I don't recall the 23 elements.
No. Okay. That's where, you know, I need to spend this 5 minutes.
Okay.
List kind of those, name those 23 elements. They're not very hard to remember. Okay. So, the 23 elements are, at the very gross level, the most grossest level, these are the 5 Mahabhutas, or the 5 elements called the earth, water, fire, air,
oh,
and
okay.
You probably recall that.
Probably, I just maybe don't know these as the 23 elements.
Yes, these are the 23 elements. So at the very gross level, right, these are the earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Those are the 5 at the gross level. Then you go into slightly subtler elements. The next level is the 5 sense organs. 5 sense organs. These are the physical organs. Organs of hearing, which is the ears. So you're talking about ears, nose, eyes, skin, and the tongue. Okay? 5 organs of action. They're called karmendriyas. Karmendriyas.
I'm having flashbacks to Ayurveda at school.
Oh, they also teach these?
Yes.
Surely, yeah, the Ayurveda.
It's the same
yes.
Basic concept.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can tell me the next slide.
So the there's the organs of reproduction, the eyes, ears, nose.
Yes, the 5 are the sense organs. We just talked about them. And then more the 5 organs of action.
So reproduction.
What are these 5? Reproduction is 1.
Elimination.
Elimination.
Digestion.
Digestion.
No, I'm sorry.
No, movement. Action.
Routine.
Elimination. Digestion is a part of elimination.
Okay. Sure.
I'm linking the, and there's the
So the hands and arms, okay, these are the movements, the organs of action for pulling, pushing,
okay.
You know, lifting, throwing, etc. Then there is the organs of locomotion, legs and feet, for kicking,
mm-hmm.
throwing with the feet and moving, running around. So organs of hands and arms, that's 1. Organs of legs and feet, that's 2. Organs of speech, which is tongue, and then elimination and procreation. 5. So they are the organs of action. Alright? So 5 jnanendriyas, which are the 5 sense organs. 5 karmendriyas, these are the sense organs of action. And then 5 tanmatras. These are the subtle sense perceptions. For every sense organ, there is a sense perception. For the organ of ear, there is the sense of
hearing.
For the organ of eye, the sense of sight, etc. So there are 5 sense perceptions. Now, these are very subtle elements. Okay?
Now, is that different or a part of, when you say, the 5 sense organs?
They're listed separately.
So, okay.
5 sense organs are listed separately than the 5 sense perceptions.
Perception, okay.
Okay, so that makes it 20 so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right? And the remaining three are just the ego, mind, and the intellect. Mind, ego, and intellect. Intellect stands at the highest level. That's the most subtle of all these 23. This is the part of the manifest reality that Karen was talking about. It's the manifest part. Where does it manifest from? From the unmanifest.
I was going to say that, and I'm like, nah, I shouldn't say that. What else are you going to say?
That's what it is, unmanifest.
What else could it be?
That's called, the unmanifested in Sanskrit is called Mula Prakriti. Or the root Prakriti, or the basis of Prakriti. Mula Prakriti. That's the unmanifest. When there is no manifestation, that's called unmanifest. And that is when all the three gunas, now they have not...
They're
no effect because they are balanced. They're 100% balanced. When the gunas are balanced 100%, there's no manifestation possible. And that's the state which is called the unmanifest state. Mula Prakriti. And what this sutra says, coming back to the sutra. Now, before we get to the sutra, the unmanifest state is the reason or the cause of the manifest state. Okay? And therefore, it's at the subtlest level, because it's the cause of everything. Cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. Intellect is the cause for the other elements which come under it. Intellect is the cause for the element of ego. Ego is the cause of the element of tanmatras and the mind. And the tanmatras eventually are the cause for all the five organs of action, as well as the five Mahabhutas, or the five elements. Now, there's a cause, there's an effect. The effect has to be at a grosser level than the cause. That's the key understanding that the asking to understand. The effect is always at a grosser level than the cause. Cause it at a subtler level. So if the tanmatra are the cause, they are subtler than the effect, which are the five elements. If the intellect is the cause, then intellect is much subtler than the grosser elements which follow it. But what is the most subtle? It's the unmanifest. Because unmanifest is the cause for everything that's manifest eventually. So unmanifest is one thing that cannot point to anything beyond it. There's nothing beyond that unmanifest. Okay? So here, what it is saying is, sukshma vishayatvam, the subtleness of these elements, subtleness, subtlety, or you can call subtleness, sukshma vishayatvam means subtleness. He has used the word subtlety. Okay? Alinga paryavasanam. It can go up the chain until you reach a linga. Linga means a pointer. A linga means no pointer. Okay? When you reach to the point where there is no... What happened? When you reach to the point when there it cannot point to anything above it, anything subtler than that, that's called alinga. Paryavasanam is the end part. It ends there eventually. So, you can think of these subtle elements all the way up the chain until you reach the unmanifest or alinga part, which is the mula prakriti. Root prakriti. So those are the levels of subtlety that you can think of in your meditation. Go off the chain. All right.
So that would be mind, ego, and intellect.
mind, ego, and intellect.
So you should meditate on those?
Eventually you can, yes. How do you do that? I don't know. But they say eventually you can meditate on me. Eventually, all the way up to Alinga. And once you reach that level of meditation, you can probably manifest, meditate on the unmanifest. I have no clue how to do that.
What's the difference between mind and ego?
What's the difference between mind and ego? I talked about it this morning in the class also. Mm-hmm. There are four functions of the mind. There are four functions: mind, intellect, ego, and the memory. Okay? Mind is the one which gathers input from the five senses. You know, there's five senses and you're getting input from the five senses. And also the mind is the one which has anxiety, has willing, desiring. All that part is called the mind. Ego is the one which puts labels on stuff. I like it, I dislike it. I am so-and-so, I'm the best mother, I'm the best father, I'm the best student, I'm the president of so-and-so, I'm the best. That's the ego part. Intellect is the one which makes the decisions and picks among choices. If there are multiple choices presented to you, who does the choice? The selection? The intellect. And then we have all the memory part, which contains all the smriti, memory, samskaras, that's what I talked about. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. Then, so does this kind of make sense now? That the subtlety, subtleness of the objects of meditation can go up the chain all the way up to the full unmanifest. Alinga means when there is no other pointer beyond that. Alinga. And that's the unmanifest part. So all these samadhis, all these samapattis so far, this is what the next, it's a very simple statement. So let's read the sutra. Ta eva.
Sabijaha.
Samadhihi.
So
ta eva sabija samadhihi. Ta means these, all these. Taha, exactly taha. All these samadhis that we have talked about so far, taha, all these are what are called the sabija, with seed, because we always had an object of meditation as a part of our meditation in all these samadhis. Okay, whether that object was subtle, whether it was gross, but we always had an object of meditation, which was our seed for the meditation. So they are called sabija samadhihi. And what he's saying is all these samadhis are sabija with seed, and his commentary is, which could bring one back into bondage or mental disturbance. That's his commentary, it's not a part of the translation. It shouldn't be here as a part of translation. That's why sometimes, you know, I kind of disagree with Swami Satyananda's translation. In fact, any translation. I think I mentioned this is the part of the reason I started learning Sanskrit, because I wanted my own understanding of each sutra and not have to rely on interpreted meanings of these sutras. I want very clear, pure meaning. And then have my own interpretation.
So does this mean that they have not achieved that pure crystal state where they see something that...
Or they have achieved that state and they are able to add much more value to it, they think.
Mm-hmm.
And not, but it works both ways. You know, from his perspective...
Well, maybe rather than putting it there, it should have been done in the commentary as opposed to as a, this is an interpretation.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What my suggestion would be to keep the translation as pure and as closely aligned with the sutra itself as possible. And then in the commentary, add whatever you want to fill in there.
Mm-hmm.
But to add commentary as a part of the sutra, that's misleading. Now, that's all I'm saying. So, this one talks about, again, nirvichara. So, the sutra is nirvichara vaisharadhye adhyatma prasadaha. One more time. Nirvichara vaisharadhye adhyatma prasadaha. Okay.
So there can be a symbol in front of a word instead of an A to make it mean its opposite.
That symbol, that little S, is that we're talking about?
I think she means the little, not the hyphen.
This little S.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, we're looking at the English.
I'm not sure which one.
The English one. Before the D.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is the same as this. That represents A.
Thank you.
That represents A.
A. So replace that with an A.
So it's this. So it means the same as, because an A means the opposite, right?
No, not in this one.
Not in this one.
No, it's just the way of writing. It's the word is adhyatma. It's not the negative part. In Sanskrit, that A is represented by this little S. That's one of the grammar rules in Sanskrit. So.
Is it because it's after the year? Is it because it's O after the year?
Yes.
That's why
it's connecting two sounds.
Yeah.
Connecting two sounds. It's called Sandhi. You're right. There you go. You're given the final word on it. Purva Rupa Sandhi. That's what it is called, technically. You just finished the exam, looks like. You did the exam in May? There you go. That's what happens. You prepare for the exam, you memorize everything, go through the exam, and then 6 months later, you forget everything. I had forgotten the name of the Sandhi, but she reminded me. It's Puru Rupa Sandhi. If you had asked me what is the name, I wouldn't remember that. That's good. So what this says, the word Vaisharadhye. Visharada means when you reach a very high state of understanding of something, then you become a Visharada. Okay? In India, you know, there are these titles that people call Sanskrit Visharada or Hindi Visharada, or, you know, it means one who has attained a very high level of understanding of that particular topic, you become a Visharada. Okay, so nirvichara vaisharadhya means when you attain the very highest level of nirvichara samadhi, very highest level of nirvichara samapatti, at that time, adhyatma prasadaha. Adhyatma means your own self, your own true nature, adhyatma, yourself. Then that prasadaha, it becomes very clear, very clean, very pure. That means in the ultimate, in the highest state of nirvichara samadhi, you realize your own true nature. That's the essential meaning of this whole statement. Adhyatma prasadaha means you become aware of your own true nature at that point. That clarity shines through when you have attained the highest state of nirvichara samadhi or samapatti. That's the Sanskrit the literal translation of this sutra. Adhyatma prasada. Okay. Now, where are we? I'm going to have to stop here. I'm getting a little tired already. This stuff is kind of heavy. I get tired of trying to talk about it. Because, like I said, you know, it's not something that is that is clear naturally to me. That's the whole point. I have to struggle with it.
It's kind of abstract.
Hmm?
It's very abstract.
It is abstract.
Yes.
And it relates to states of consciousness which are beyond our normal state.
Normal.
So
experience.
Beyond our normal experience. It's hard. But as long as we understand this at our intellectual level, I think we are doing good. Because once you have that level of understanding, and then eventually you start meditating and start attaining those states, you will have a much better, clearer picture of what's going on. You can explain things better. Your mind will become sharper then. I think that's what will happen eventually.
You know what to look forward to.
You know exactly what to look forward to when you know this understanding. That's a very good.